Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about the cultural problem of porn.
This topic was spurred by the Time magazine cover from April 11th. Entitled Porn, Why Young Men Who Grew Up With Internet Porn Are Becoming Advocates for Turning It Off.
Yeah, it's an interesting article. It's just like every other article that you read. You got to eat the meat and spit out the bones. Basically, the essence of the article is coming from men who grew up in the culture when things were just saying no to drugs was kind of this big movement. And one of the main authors and interviewers of this article is saying, I wish somebody would have told me to just say no to porn. And they're taking an angle of, if I want to have a better sexuality, I have to get pornography out of my life. And so there's this whole reboot movement, it's called, where you can create accountability software and all of these things. And it's not at all from a biblical perspective and all just from a, I want to be a better person, sexually whole. So
the story these guys tell is basically that they got to the place where they could only be sexually aroused through pornography. And so they could not enjoy a sexual experience with an actual real life woman. And so the stories are basically like sexual dysfunction and erectile dysfunction coming from frequent porn use. And so these guys are basically saying, hey, this whole lie that got sold to us that, you know, porn was about, you know, sexuality and enhancing our sexuality, it's actually destroying our sexuality.
One of the, you know, major quotes in here that caught my eye was, I just want to enjoy sex again and feel a desire for another person. There's all kinds of staggering things that if you actually put your mind around this, the porn industry is gigantic. It's one of the largest adult sites. Pornhub, an explicit video sharing site, says that it gets 2.4 million visitors per hour, and that in 2015 alone. People around the globe watched 4,392,486,580 hours of its content, which is more than twice as long as Homo sapiens have spent on the earth. That's crazy.
That's a really high number.
Yeah, that's really high. I don't know if that's true.
So as Christians, here's sort of our take on this. It's really fascinating when the church has said for centuries, stay away from something. This is bad. This is destructive. This is sin. This leads to death. And then when the culture says, no, it doesn't, we're going to do it anyway. And then when the culture gets to the place where they're like, oh, crap, it actually is reaping death, right? The law of sowing and reaping in the Bible, you reap what you sow. The one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, Galatians chapter 6 says. And this article is basically saying, yeah, what these guys are reaping from their habitual use of pornography is the inability to enjoy any kind of normal sexual relationship with another human being, and therefore, it really is producing death, destruction, mayhem. So whenever the culture gets to the place where it's starting to identify something as a destructive influence, you know, I don't imagine that because of this Time article, the porn industry is going to go, oh gosh, we need to shut down. In fact, I imagine that many people will there'll be a backlash against this article, and many people will be like, oh, it's not bad, and these guys are just, you know, it's something wrong with these guys, it's not porn. But guys, I feel like this just highlights for us as leaders and for us as church leaders, the reality that we live in a world right now where this is the most dominant shaping influence, especially on young men, not to factor out women, but the statistics show men much more frequently use porn than women, and that it has a particularly destructive effect for men in terms of their ability to be sexually involved. So if this is a formative influence in our culture, it's important that we as a church start engaging it as such and helping men and women come out of the deforming realities of pornography. As a father, here's the really scary thing for me is I think I can't remember if it was this article or a commentary on this article that I read. This Time article has been sort of chopped up by multiple different people, and so I was doing some reading on the internet, and someone made the point that with the broadband internet reached more than 50% of households in 2007, and smartphones reached more than 50% of the population in I think 2011 or 13. So. You know, the sort of generation of people who are now in their teens and 20s are the first generation of people that have had access to video pornography. Mm-hmm. And video porn is uniquely more destructive than the old school sort of Playboy magazine centerfold kind of thing. Those are still photos. And when I was in high school, that's what guys had in their locker room and in their, up on their walls and whatever, in high school and college. They didn't have access to video porn. You had to go buy that at a video store, and you were sort of like a real weird, deviant, dark person if you went that route. The access to video porn means that for many people, for many young people, they didn't come to sort of adolescence and sort of sexual, maturity and then discover pornography, but rather porn is sort of their sexual education. Mm-hmm. And that's, there's people listening to this podcast that can relate to that story, that they've never known sexuality apart from porn. They started mm-hmm. using it when they were, coming of age in terms of adolescence, and that colors then how they understand sex, what kind of sex they're interested in and looking for, how they understand a healthy or a normal sexual relationship to function, and so that I think we have to identify how deformed pornography has made us. And when I say us, I don't mean every single one of us, but I mean us culturally, right? That we're deformed in our understanding of sexuality. And there's more for the church to do here than just say, hey, we should cultivate purity. What we actually need to do is, how do we reform and reshape people's whole worldview about sexuality? Because it's not just a slap your hand, don't do this. This is your whole way of thinking about who you are sexually is deformed because mm-hmm. of the influence of pornography.
Yeah, and there's a Juniper Research article that says that by 2017, a quarter of a billion people are expected to be accessing mobile adult content from their phones or tablets, which is an increase of more than 30% from 2013. And mobile adult video chat alone will have compounded annual growth rate of 25%. So basically, the porn industry is even now being built around the YouTube realities and your mobile device. And this is way back in 2006. So this is a decade ago. One in five Google searches on a mobile device was for pornography. And that's a decade ago. Hmm. So if five people are in the room and you just, hey, let's Google something, one of those out of the five is for explicit material.
Something in this article that I thought was interesting as well is the extensive effects porn can have on other areas of your life. Some of the guys that are interviewed in this article talk about the social effects that it has as well, how they feel more detached. Or there's a quote here where the guy said when he got off porn, it's like, I feel more focused, awake, socially confident, connected to others, more interested in daily activities, and more emotionally sensitive. So the effects of porn are widespread, and how they and the impact they have on us, just in even daily tasks and how we connect to other people. And so it's not just even the performance of the sexual activity, but also how it's affecting relationships. That this article is hitting on as well.
Dusty, I wonder, I know you just did some work on this. Can you summarize briefly what's the difference between how men tend to use porn and how women tend to use porn?
Yeah, that's a great question. The stats are always higher for men using porn rather than women using porn. In fact, the number one reason right now for women, they're just curious about porn, because the majority of women in culture right now are, well, my boyfriend or my husband's addicted to porn, so I need to go see what that's like. And so the curiosity tab is the biggest for them. And so the stats are always lower for women, but they do exist. And here's the main difference. And this is from the Human Brain Mapping Journal, which is a study. This is a 2002 study. It's a while ago. But here's the main difference. Men and women have similar regions of the brain activated during their viewing of porn, but only in men is there a significant activation of the thalamus and the hypothalamus. Now, the hypothalamus is responsible for primary food drives, water, and sex. So just like your body says, I need food and water, in men, that's also telling you that you need sex. So that's your main motivational hormonal control. And that doesn't exist in women. That's not why they're pursuing it. So men are more addicted to it. They also, when they see pornography, because of that reality, they envision themselves actually having sex with that person, where that's not the case for the woman. So the main difference is actually like a biological makeup, which is why agencies like Your Brain on Porn and places like that exist, because they're saying for men, they have to get their brains actually off of it.
Yeah, so there's actually a sort of a chemical reality in the brain that gets built here. And you can see how, again, the Bible's thousands of years old and it doesn't use scientific language, right? But when it says the wages of sin is death, when it says things like, you know, the one who sows the flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, we wouldn't have put that in the categories of someone who looks at porn and masturbates a lot is going to create a chemical pathway in their brain that's intended to be something that unites them to one person in marriage, and actually it's being used and perverted in ways that make them feel like they need porn, like they need food. but that's really, like, right? That's how God made us. That's the connection between soul and body, is that these things are never just sort of soul level, this is just sort of a struggle I have. They're always whole being related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to go with that, if it's whole being related, if you start to look at pornography, I think the Time article calls it the new drug, which is true. That's exactly what it is. But we don't treat it that way. We're real quiet about it. It's like huge and glooming, and Time's writing cover stories about it, but we're still like ashamed to call it what it is, which is, you know, the heroin of the 70s and cocaine of the 60s. And like, we don't, you know, we should talk about it like that and get more serious about that.
One of my longings, guys, for especially men listening to this podcast, and of course this article is primarily focused on young men and this reaction to porn addiction. I think for most men, the guys that I talk to in our church who struggle with porn addiction, they always feel like, well, it doesn't really hurt anybody, right? It's a struggle I have, but it's a private struggle. You know, it's not affecting anyone else. And this article brings interesting light into that, because the reality is, as soon as you go to marry a woman, your pornography struggle immediately affects your marriage. Mm. It affects how your intimacy is going to be with your wife. Or if you are married, it's affecting your intimacy, whether you know it or not. Mm-hmm. These guys are saying, I can't enjoy a real woman because I only enjoy virtual women. Mm-hmm. And if you think about even the chemical pathways you were just talking about, Dusty, right? The reality of true sexuality is you have to woo someone, you have to win someone. It's not a have an orgasm in 60 seconds, right? It's a long process, as God intended it to be. And when you condition yourself over the course of time to see something, be aroused and stimulated, and have an orgasm, you condition your whole body in a way that prevents the actual enjoyment of a true sexual encounter the way God intended it to be. And so you actually are forming yourself in a way that works against any kind of meaningful sexual interaction for perhaps much of your future. And men especially need to see that, not as like, everybody struggles with this. Every guy justifies their struggle with porn as like, well, it's a hard thing, man. People struggle with this. And I think if men had a bigger vision of their lives and a sense of like, gosh, I want to be able to actually enjoy a real sexual relationship with a wife someday, that might change how I actually tackle the problem of porn in my life, and how seriously I treat it. Do I treat it like a drug addiction? No, because I'm not, you know, in the gutter getting picked up and taken to the hospital because I overdid. Like, you know, that's right. It's a private struggle. It tends to be sort of something men do shamefully when they're alone, and it just, the consequences don't seem as present to most men, but they need to. We need to see it as massively destructive.
C.S. Lewis he wrote a letter back in the early 1950s to a friend about masturbation. Obviously, pornography wasn't as widespread at the time, but what he says remains true. It's a long quote, so buckle up. For me, the real evil of masturbation would be that it takes an appetite which, in lawful use, leads the individual out of himself to complete and correct his own personality and that of another, and turns it back. It sends the man back into the prison of himself, there to keep a harem of imaginary brides. And this harem, once admitted, works against his ever getting out and really uniting with a real woman. For the harem is always accessible, always subservient, calls for no sacrifices or adjustments, and can be endowed with erotic and psychological attractions which no real woman can rival. Among those shadowy brides, he's always adored, always the perfect lover. No demand is made on his unselfishness, no mortification ever imposed on his vanity. In the end, they become merely the medium through which he increasingly adores himself. After all, almost the main work of life is to come out of ourselves, out of the little dark prison that we are all born in. Masturbation is to be avoided, as all things are to be avoided, which retard this process. The danger is that of coming to love the prison. So even back in the early 50s, he saw the effects.
He's saying the same thing you're saying, Chris, which is that the effects of this are not just sexual. They're interpersonal. It imprisons me in myself, and it makes me become less of a person, less of a loving, caring, presentable, relatable human being.
Yeah, and not to say that porn is always the cause of vulnerability issues, but I think there is a significant link between this and even in pastoral ministry, dealing with guys that have significant vulnerability problems. Like, they cannot open themselves up to other people, to their wives in relationship, and that creates significant marital tension. And so we're creating a culture of men who have no capacity to be vulnerable, no capacity to be self-sacrificial, to give of themselves, to really have a deep relationship with other men, with ladies, even to be able to relate to ladies who aren't their wives as sisters in Christ. And so this just begins to snowball into some significant issues relationally with people.
So guys, let's talk for a few minutes as we sort of close out the podcast about how the church can be a counterculture here. When the culture begins to identify porn is a problem, and when cultural voices are saying what the church has been saying for quite some time, it's a great opportunity to ask this question: how can the church demonstrate itself to be a beautiful counterculture in this area? And I think it begins, Chris, as you just said, with men coming out of themselves, putting this sin to death, men and women saying this has to not be part of our practice. We can't be okay with this in our lives. And I think most people aren't. Most people experience shame and guilt when they're experiencing lust and pornography and masturbation. And yet, because it's such a personal and private sin, it's just easy to not bring it into the light and not seek to actually put it to death. And so I think there's a need, as I think about this reality in the church, two things need to be true. One, it needs to be safe to say, I struggle with this. I have a problem with this. I need to bring this to some people and get some help. So we got to create safe space for that. And people need to have courage to do that. So if you're a listener, don't blame it on, I don't know who I could talk to. You can talk to anyone. Like, you know, if you're in a healthy church, people aren't going to be like, oh, right. They're going to say, sweet, thanks for bringing this into light. Let's get to work on how to transform this area of your life. So there needs to be freedom to bring it into light. There also needs to be just a hatred of this. Like, it needs to not be justifiable. It needs to not be, well, everybody struggles with it, or most people I know struggle with it, or gosh, my dad introduced me to it. And everybody has a story of how this maybe became a problem in their lives. We can't be okay with that. We can't allow this to be something that we justify. And that's what it's become for a lot of Christian men, is sort of a struggle that it's just okay to have. And it's not okay. It's destructive. It's wicked. It's selfish. It's dishonoring to self and others. It dishonors marriage in a really significant way. And it dishonors your own body, you know? And this is what Paul says in 1 Corinthians, right? Everyone who sins with a prostitute, which is what you're doing when you look at porn, sins against his own body. Like, it's not just you're sinning against somebody else. You're dishonoring the very sort of bodily existence that God gave you. And so I think there needs to be sort of a real firm, pursuit of holiness that we live into as the church, to say, let's stop playing games with this and treating it as like a minor problem, and let's start treating it like drug addiction. Mm-hmm. Dusty, like, hey man, this is a chemically addictive substance that creates pathways in your brain that you can't just go undo tomorrow. And so just like heroin addicts need detox, and just like alcohol addicts need detox many times, porn addicts are going to need detox. There's going to need to be a radical break with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I hear you saying there is just a 2016 version of Matthew 5, right? Like,
yes.
You're not going to be able to look at porn and not lust. And so in light of that, let's get serious about killing sin. You know, just like Jesus would say in the Sermon on the Mount, if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off. You know, like, he's getting real serious about holiness, real serious about sanctification and pursuing what is actually good and right. And Bob, as you asked that question, I was thinking, what's one way the church can be countercultural here? And I think one of the biggest things is, the most staggering stat to me also as a father is that if your kids haven't seen pornography by the age of 12, then they're like a minority.
Yeah.
And so if that's the case, one of the things the Time article brings out is parents aren't talking about it because, number one, because parents are enslaved to it, I think. They don't talk about that in the article. But I think if parents aren't talking about it and your kid has a smartphone or an iPod or a device, they're curious and they can do whatever they want with that device, and they can answer all the curiosity through YouTube, through Google, through something. So if you're not engaging that conversation, one way I think for us to be counterculture as the church is to have a church full of parents that is going to say, hey, I'm nervous a little bit about the questions that might come, but I'm going to enter in the conversation. I'm at least going to seek the answers that my kid's asking. I'm going to talk to my kids about this because they're going to see it. I mean, if your kid hits 12, stats say they've seen it. Or we'll see it soon. So if that's the case, let's prompt that conversation.
Well, and let's
be proactive there.
And let's instruct our kids of the evils of it so that when they see it, mm-hmm. if we're not there, they don't treat it as something neutral, but they know, mm-hmm. like, I need to run from this. So, yeah. like, if their buddy mm-hmm. says, hey, you want to look at this, something goes off in their mind of like, okay, mm-hmm. this is not good, right? That what we want is to activate the mm-hmm. conscience with our kids
right.
so that they have a moral filter for pornography and not just like, oh, no idea what that is. Never had this conversation before. Never heard of this.
And you're not going to be there. It's a dark secret sin. It's not like it's going to come out on the kitchen table. It's going to be at the neighbor's house. It's going to be on the kid's phone in the dugout during, you know, like when your kid's benched or something. Like, it's going to come out in a way to be cool. And you're right. Like, you have to equip your kid to say no to that. And then you also want to know what happened there, because what's going to happen is some sort of stimuli, according to stats and brain research and all that stuff, something just got stimulated. And as a parent, you want to engage that. You don't want to just like hope that goes away.
Yeah. So let's talk about some practices here for parents, because this is an area of great concern for me. I think Christian parents are stupid in this area. If your kid has a television in their bedroom, go get it out right now. No Christian child should have a television in their bedroom. The reason is because half the stuff on TV is pornographic. Like, you don't need to go to a porn site for you to have an inappropriate thing for an 11 or 12 year old to see. Do not have a TV in your kid's bedroom. If you have devices in the home, you better have filtering software for the whole house, not just for the device. And the best software is called OpenDNS, and it probably takes somebody with a little bit of know-how to set it up. But basically what it is it's a filter that attaches to your – it doesn't attach. It's not the right word, but it's software that runs on the server that gives you all your internet. So you don't have to put it on every device, every phone, every iPad, every computer. It basically runs, you know, whatever Cox internet comes into your house, that's where the filter runs, and you can set it up to screen this kind of material. And then third, just your kids shouldn't have a smartphone. Like, if your kid's 17 or 18, maybe.
But then,
like,
they wouldn't be cool.
Right. If you have a 12-year-old with a smartphone, you're a moron. Like, I'm sorry. I realize, like, so it's harder and harder to get a non-smartphone. Like, the companies are all trying to push us that direction because they want you on a data plan. But, man, like, I went on Facebook and begged for an old flip phone to give my kids. And somebody, like, I just got rid of mine. You can have it. So that's what my kids use, is just, like, an old-school phone, because I do not want any kind of smartphone in my household with my children. Now, again, I know I'm on the verge of like being legalistic here and prescribing things, but I just think if you're a Christian parent and these stats in this Time magazine article are true, which the stats are, Dusty, what isn't it, by the age of
18 to 39.
But by the age of 18, something like 90% of young men have seen porn.
You've at least seen it moving porn.
90%.
Moving porn.
90% people. So in my mind, this is not just like, oh, well, I mean, I my kid had a smartphone and it was just easy. This is like, if you're a Christian parent living in the internet age, this needs to be priority number one for you, is to protect your kids from this stuff as long as you possibly can. And if you're going to call me a protectionist, isolationist, scared parent, fine, call me that. I'm going to call myself biblically wise and we'll fight about it on the next podcast.
let me anticipate another objection to kind of add to your argument here, that oftentimes what has been levied at Christians is, oh, we treat sex as dirty, we're afraid of it, that if you try to do what you're saying, Bob, that we're just afraid of sex here. And it's like, no, that is not what is at stake here. Is we actually have a high view of sex. We think it is a gift from God, and we don't want the degraded just trash pouring in and shaping our kids. And so we're afraid of sex, it's we value it higher than those who would degrade it with pornography. So I don't even buy that argument, and I don't even think Christians should fall for that argument or be afraid of that charge being pushed on them.
Interesting too, like as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, man, he's really fired up about that. And then I've been just deep in stats lately on this for a variety of reasons. And in 2010, so again, 6 years old, but the best stat we got, 6 years old, kids 14 to 16 years old from a school, 75% of those kids, 14 to 16, said their parents never discussed internet pornography with them. And 81% of them were looking at it at home. So you got to engage your kids. If the church is going to change the world, then we got to have conversations about pornography with our kids.
And for the five of you that are hurt, that have your feelings hurt because I called you a moron because your kid does have a smartphone, I'm sorry. I'm not calling you personally a moron. I'm saying that's a really dumb decision. Let's go fix it. Like, get rid of that tomorrow after you listen to this podcast, and let's do something different.
You know, I think too, what's fascinating to you about mobile devices and all this stuff, and I have been trying to educate myself here, because what's been helpful for me is to think through the lens of, my kids are all natives to technology.
Yes.
My son is a native to any mobile device. He's never not seen one. And it's new to me, right? So I'm an immigrant into technology, especially mobile devices, and he's a native of it. So you got to figure out how to speak that language. You got to learn that language. You got to enter into that culture and dive in as a believer.
Well, let me say a little more on this, since I went strong a few minutes ago and you guys are all like, worried about.
I got you. I'm backing you up with stats.
No.
Somebody needs to say it.
Somebody. We're going to get at least some hate mail.
This is how we get Twitter response.
That's right. Somebody's going to actually tweet us.
Being legalistic. Not the area.
I would say this. Like, you're going to have to. So the process of parenting is moving your kid to independence and responsibility. So assuming your child at age 18 is going to go join the army or go off to college or go get a job as a plumbing apprentice or do something, right? At some point, they're out of your household. Your job is to transition them to that well. So yeah, my goal is my kid can get a smartphone at some point, and I've taught him and her how to reasonably have wisdom in using it. I'm just saying that an 11 or 12-year-old does not have that wisdom yet, and you should not give them a device that they can get all kinds of ugly, disgusting, degrading material on. That's naive as a parent. Okay, so I'm not saying smartphones are evil and your kid's never going to have one. They are going to have to probably have one when they, you know, as they grow. I think parents are very naive in these things, as the stats you just read show, Dusty. And Christian parents, unfortunately, are not very much better. So Christian parents generally do a good job of imparting morality. Hey, save sex for marriage and porn is bad.
Yeah,
they don't always encourage the conversations and, hey, let's talk about it and it's an open door. And they don't often give the why behind the what, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm going to prohibit you from watching this kind of television show or from these kinds of internet sites, why am I doing that? Why are these, what's the value set behind this? And what are we after as a family? And what are we after in terms of maturity and wisdom that gets short-circuited if we pursue this kind of stuff?
I'm asking my kids all the time. Well, not all the time, not like every day. Like, I go home freaking out about it. But I ask my kids periodically, hey, have you seen anything lately? See anything you want to talk about? Especially if I realize that they've been at the neighbor's house for a long period of time or, you know, wherever. Because you got to invite that conversation, because you got to remember kids are processing all the time and they haven't made sense of what they've seen. So if you draw that stuff out as a parent, man, I think we could change the church, change the culture. Just spend some time with the women of Cormdale talking about this and talking about sexual temptation and how women are facing sexual temptation more and more, especially in 2016. And partly just because it's available to us. The internet is a buffet of sexuality, right? And even just going off of this Time article that we're mentioning, 46% of men and 16% of women ages 18 to 39 are intentionally viewing pornography any given week. Now, that might sound high to you and you might say, yeah, see, it's still stronger for men. It's a male problem. It is a male problem predominantly because of what we said earlier, because of how the brains are wired. But it's still an issue for women. And even this Time article throws a caveat in at the end that says this is what women are facing. And so even if you're a woman, there is help for you. And there's all kinds of reasons why you're seeking that. And the church could be a resource for you too. And it's time for the church to start talking about that and at least inviting that conversation.
The opportunity I think we have for the gospel here is to reclaim sex as beautiful. Because I think what porn does is it's degrading. And everybody would agree that it's degrading. Even the people that are like, we should have access to all the porn we want. If you read this Time article, it's clear nobody stops with like watching people have sex. It always goes darker. It goes more aggressive. It goes more violent. Sort of violent. I mean, especially with men, they never stop at like, oh, let me just watch a sex scene. It's always moving in the direction of oppression, violence. And therefore, pornography is changing the nature of how our culture views sexuality, and not in a good way. And so I think what's going to happen over time, in the next 10 to 20 years, you're going to have a lot of backlash against the reality of sex, because sex will no longer be seen as beautiful. People are going to feel it as ugly and degrading, because that's more and more what pornography teaches, especially men, to sort of pursue in sexual encounters, is a quick orgasm and sort of violent, aggressive behavior. That's not fun for anyone. And it's especially not honoring to either person involved. And so there's a chance here for the church, as we hold out a biblical ethic, as you said, Chris, and we hold forth, hey, we're not just saying here's what's right and here's what's wrong. We're saying here's what's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Here's a sexual relationship that's beautiful, that honors the body, that honors the person, that honors emotional intimacy, not just physical intimacy, that honors the communion of souls that's present in sexuality. I think as we can hold that up and say, we're not saying sex is bad, don't do it. We're saying sex is beautiful, don't degrade it. Mm-hmm. We're saying sex is honoring, don't dishonor it. As we make that call, I think increasingly it's going to be seen by the culture as, wow, that's something different than what porn tells us. That's a countercultural message that becomes attractive when I've experienced so much degrading sexuality that I'm asking the question, what is even sexuality in the first place? And for the church to tell me, hey, it's something beautiful. It's something God intended for good. It's something that's redemptive and that creates a sense of true humanity. It's a communion of person and a communion of souls. There's a chance there for that to be a compelling message in a culture that experiences nothing but a pornified view of sex.
Yeah, and as the church too, we're going to be engaging a lot of people that are trying to heal from this. I mean, this is going to be a massive mission field, a massive pastoral care field where, I mean, just we have a society of addicts. And so as people are detoxing from porn, as they are running up against the effects of their addiction, what is it that the church is going to hold out for them? And so that's where the gospel, that's where the message of, man, Jesus will not only set you free from your sin and forgive you and cleanse you, but the shame of porn, like he will set you free from that. And there's forgiveness and there's a new identity, new hope. So, I mean, we're holding out this message of freedom and beauty and restoration that only the gospel can do. I mean, the self-help and some of these, you know, the websites and they're mentioned in this article and some of these programs, you know, cool on them in some ways, but it only goes so far. Mm-hmm. It doesn't offer the same hope that the gospel has. And so I think as a church, we need to be ready to help this culture and, you know, all these addicts and as they're trying to come clean.
Mm-hmm. I think as a missional church, here's a last thought. Chris, what you just said is important, that
a missionary church needs to see itself as a place of rehabilitation and healing for those who are addicted to sex, to porn, those who have been degraded by this sort of cultural phenomenon. Here's the other side of what it means to be a missional church is we have to unpopularly oppose things that are destructive. Mm-hmm. And no one wants to be the person saying porn is bad. For some reason, like, that's not cool to be that person. And so I think a lot of especially younger Christians feel sort of this tension of like, well, I know it is bad. I know I shouldn't look at it, but, you know, everybody, all my friends do. And so I don't want to be that sort of nerdy Christian that says, hey, you shouldn't do that. I mean, I think about guys who live in fraternity houses and college students especially. This is everywhere. Mm-hmm. I just think there's a call to the church here to resist and to be unpopular, to be unfashionably opposed mm-hmm. to these kinds of things. And I'll give an example. I remember 10 or 12 years ago, the movie Little Miss Sunshine came out. And a lot of people in Quorum Day were like, oh, it's such a great movie, and, you know, it's a good story. There's a whole subtext in that movie of pornography, and it's sort of like this humorous subtext. In other words, like, it's in the car, and the cop finds it, and they sort of give the cop a couple porn magazines as a way of getting out of a ticket. Like, the whole subtext of the movie is like, ha-ha, we have porn, but it's not really that big a deal. And I hated that movie for that reason, because I realized what's going on there is the storyline of the whole movie might be fun and redemptive, but that subtext is saying porn is normal. Mm-hmm. It's not really even a big deal. And
it's, you know, frat boy humor. Just laugh it off.
Yeah. And so, like, that's the culture that we live in, and that's what Christians with all their might need to resist is this sort of normalizing of a culture that honors pornography and that sees it as not a big deal. It's a very big deal, and it's highly destructive. And Christians need to sort of assertively and thoughtfully resist that kind of normalizing mm-hmm. of these kinds of things in society, because the more this becomes normal, the more it just changes our whole way of seeing, and that's always destructive when we let influences change how we see something as important and as foundational as sexuality. That's a place where the church needs to have a prophetic voice.
Yeah, in light of being countercultural, and you're listening to this, and it's time to come clean, or it's time to seek help and at least take the first step of coming into the light, man, we want to do that for you. So if you're part of Quorum Deo Church, please reach out to us as your pastors and as your leaders. If you're part of First City Church, reach out to First City Church leaders and seek some help. And if you're listening in a totally different context, I want to encourage you to believe the best about your church and your church leaders. And this will not surprise them. This is a part of, if it's on the Time magazine cover, it should be on the cover of your bulletin too. It's a part of the church. It's a part of society. It's just reality. So seek out some help from your local church. And if you need help finding contact us somehow, and we'll try to point you in the right direction.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We invite you to join us next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.